This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
Comic books, comic time. Writers and artists are on the line. They make a splash as a comic's read and take us on a trip behind the spread. Watch out for comic book commentary. Spinning a winning inside fix, how they got a hot idea. Narrative, character, visual tricks, and bam, onomatopoeia. Uh-huh, it's comic book commentary.
Hey there, welcome to Comic Book Commentary. I am today's guest. My name is Heath Corson. I am a writer. You might know me from some of my animation work, which includes Justice League War, Batman Assault on Arkham, Justice League Throne of Atlantis, Justice League Action, as well as my comic book work, which I'll be talking about today. You might know me from the Bizarro miniseries that I did with Gustavo Duarte, as well as my Detective Chimp story that I did with him, and Nightwing meets Megilla Gorilla, which I just did for DC, which was an amazing experience. But today, I'm going to talk about the Adam Ant five-page backups that I'm doing in Scooby-Doo Apocalypse. This is a really interesting story because actually it was Geffen and Dematis, who were writing these, and they wrote them for Scooby-Doo number 30 as well as number 31. And it turned out for some reason that they couldn't continue. So I had just finished Megilla Nightwing, and I had called up my editor, Jim Chadwick, and said, "Hey, man, what else do you have?" And he said, "Nothing, but we'll keep you on the list." And then they needed someone to step in for the Adam Ant, and it needed to be fast, and it needed to be someone that they had probably worked with before and knew could handle it. And Dematis threw me up for the job and said, "How about Heath Corson? He can do it. He already has some ideas." And the editor, Harvey Richards, called me and said, or emailed me and said, "Hey, Dematis says you're the guy for this. Are you cool with this? We would need a script like ASAP." And I was like, "Well, how soon's ASAP?" And he's like, "We would need it by tomorrow." And I was like, "Yeah, no problem," considering it's five pages. And Dematis and Geffen had already sort of laid out the structure for what these stories were going to be. I think they knew it was going to run from 30 all the way to 36. So I was going to be able to do five of these five-page backup stories. They had set up the voice of Adam Ant as sort of this. First of all, I'm working with Gustavo Vasquez, who's my artist, who is unbelievable and amazing, and a guy who I have been watching for a really long time. So to get the opportunity to work with him is spectacular. And Gus had redesigned Adam Ant, which I had seen, and it's so much fun. If you haven't seen it, go look it up online. He'd given him these mandibles in his mouth. He'd given him like this really cool helmet and the shirt. So Adam Ant was a really fun redesign, and the idea for the story was that Adam Ant and a plant named Itty, which is a real character in DCU history, were both competing to be members of the Justice League. The first story was called A League of His Own, and it was Adam Ant and it was Itty sitting on the watchtower waiting for their trials to start while Batman and Superman were sort of of realizing this ridiculous situation that they're in when Wonder Woman walks by, and they said, like, hey, let's make Wonder Woman do the first trial. So I loved this idea that they had come up with, that a plant and an ant, which is the name of my spoken word album, actually, The Plant and the Ant, were going to compete. Itty doesn't talk. Itty is a plant. Itty supposedly has powers, but doesn't really do anything. And Adam Ant is this boisterous, talkative, aggressive, sort of superlative character. And the way that they had written him in the first couple issues was really fun to me. And I really liked the relationship between him and Itty, because it wasn't that they were competitors. They were, Adam Ant had sort of said, you know, okay, cool, we're best friends now, and we're both going on this amazing journey. And I really clicked into that. And I loved the sense of Adam Ant as just this big, fun character who had apparently had existed forever and finally was going to join the Justice League, or wanted to join the Justice League. So I really thought that was a really fun idea. And I had read the first one and I had read the Wonder Woman one, and they struck me as playful and they struck me as really fun and very much in the spirit of Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, which gave you a little bit of what you knew in the Hanna-Barbera warm, fun world, but also sort of challenged it by doing something completely different. So I read the first one. I read the second one that Geffen and DeMatteis had done, and they had really set up these trials, each one with a guest star. And I was like, great. And then they'd even given me the toss up for the next story, which was going to be a Green Lantern. And I was like, great. And it's like, but it's not the Green Lantern you think. It's going to be Nort. Now, as a fan, I'm well on record as being a fan, like the world's biggest fan of Justice League International. And that is Geffen and DeMatteis as well. And so for this guy who I idolize, who I happen to be friends with, and I consider a mentor, J.M. DeMatteis, to say to me, like, hey, here's Nort, freaked me out. And so they said, okay, well, we need this script like ASAP. Like, well, actually, the first, let me back up. The editor had said, what would you do in these five pages? And I said, okay, here's my idea for the story. They're going to do a typical in space Green Lantern version, which is very much the vintage Star Trek, where we're going to go see a planet, but we're not going to get involved. We don't want to get into... we're going to test our restraint on these less advanced societies. You have to make sure that you're showing restraint and not introducing them to everything that you know. And I thought that was a really fun setup. And I said, okay, well, what if they're cats? Because I knew Nort was kind of a dog, and they're yellow cats. And I remember these sort of space stories of the Green Lantern Corps, where they would be dealing with something that was just sort of a galactic happenstance. That wasn't really something evil or bad. It was like a space cloud that made everybody super aggressive. And I was like, I think I came up with that, but I remember things along those lines. And I was like, that's a really cool idea. It's this yellow space cloud that makes things super aggressive, that makes these yellow cats aggressive. And we're going to pit them against Nort. And the editor was like, well, that sounds good, but how are you going to do that in five pages? And I sort of laid out the pages. And then they said, great, go do that, please, and get it to us by tomorrow. So this was also the reason I could do that was I was not working in full script. And this was my first time not working in full script. And for those of you who don't know what that means, full script is when not only do you do the layout, but you also add all the dialogue. In the sense of, in order to get this done as quickly as possible, I wasn't going to do the dialogue. I was just going to tell Gus, the artist, exactly what the story was, allow him to do the layouts and really, you know, do the pages and get everything set up art-wise. And then I would have the time afterwards to go back and put in the dialogue. This was the first time I'd ever done that. DeMatteis had worked that way a ton and had said he'd really enjoyed it, because it just allowed him on that path to focus on the voices of the characters and not really worry about anything else. So I was, that was a leap of faith. I was really excited to do that. And I wrote 5 pages of what I thought it would be. And I said, all right, well, it's here, it's this, it's that. And here's the overall story. And here's how I think we can effectively do that. And then I started to get pages back, and I was super impressed. So I'm going to walk you through the 3 published Adam Ant stories that are out there right now. And that is number 32 with Nort, number 33, which is with the Atom, and number 34, which is with Superman. And then we'll talk a little bit about what might be coming down the pipeline with the 2 final stories. And then as we wrap up the Adam Ant backups. So the first one in number 32 is Northwest Passage, and that was a story title that was gifted to me by Dematis, and I got very, very excited about it. And we open with Nort and Itty and Adam Ant flying through space. And I just have to say, the second panel, I adore the way Gus draws Adam Ant with the mandibles at the side of his mouth. And I made a note of going, you know, I really want to do something with those mandibles somewhere down the road, because I really wanted to play on the fact that this is still intrinsically an ant. Itty is still intrinsically a plant. So let's heighten those things and find ways to play with them. And I feel like we did. So Nort tells us that they are going to go on this planet with the radioactive energy cloud, and they are going to pristine prehistoric planet, and they're just going to go hang out. They're going to take a look. It's going to test their restraint in influencing less advanced societies, and we already know that something's going to happen to make them totally get involved. So down on the ground, we see the yellow tigers are getting their lassos ready. They lasso Nort and they yank him down to the surface of the planet as he goes screaming. They hog tie him. And Adam Ant tells us, look, Itty, I know that I could really jump in there and I could knock everybody down and save the day, but we really shouldn't do that. We should stay out of sight. Maybe we should just watch for a while. And then it turns out that they are going to sacrifice Nort into the great haze cloud. And we had this was interesting because I realized I had kind of backed myself into the corner that I have these giant yellow tigers that are snuffing and growling and purring, and the ring had to translate what they were saying. So I had to make sure that the ring, which was the green translation, was telling us exactly what we do. So they go to the High Priestess. The High Priestess is going to sacrifice Nort into the giant haze cloud. Adam Ant and Itty are going to stay and hang out and watch him. They think maybe they'll offer him dinner or something, but no, the offer is an offering to the great haze cloud in the sky. And as they start to raise him, Nort tells us, well, he's worried because his ring isn't going to be able to protect him because it is a yellow haze cloud and the radiation is going to kill him. And that's when Itty and Adam Ant show back up, and I knew that we're on page 3, so I knew that they had to do something. Also, at the top of the page, I like the idea that all the giant yellow cats are chanting, and their chanting sounds like meow, meow. I love sound effects. I think sound effects in comics are a lost art, and they make me super, super happy. So I always want to find unique and fun sound effects rather than typical sound effects. Also, and the other one on the page here is they're using this weird sort of dentist chair to raise him up from the Aztec pyramid like society into the cloud. And of course, the guy is doing it and it says creak, because I thought that would be really funny that even though they're going to raise him all the way up into the yellow haze cloud, no one has actually oiled the equipment for a while. So I thought that was funny. So Adam Ant shows up and Adam Ant gives this rousing speech. And he's like, you could do it. We could rise up. Don't worry. And Nort tells us, like, I don't know what you think I can do. I'm tied up. It's not going to happen. And then Adamant says, no, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to your fleas. And then we see an army of fleas, which I found out later when talking to Gus. He was not super happy about, because we were under a time crunch for this story. And he hits the bottom of three and he sees an army of fleas. And he's like, son of a, this dumb ass writer. And so I was like, oh, no, I didn't even think of that. And I was like, I gave you all this stuff to do. And he was like, I know, but you know, we got it done. So this army of fleas, which I figured, of course, Nort, the space dog, would have space fleas. And that was once I sort of figured out what that story was going to be, the space fleas were the things that cracked it wide open for me. And I worked backwards from there. The space fleas all go down to the yellow tigers and they start making them scritch-a-scratch, and then again, we have these great sound effects, scritch-a-scratch. And let me also just point out these hi-fi colors, because I think these colors are unbelievable, because the yellow of the haze cloud is different from the yellow of the planet, which is different from the yellow of the space tigers. Gus has got these guys with their... on all fours with their hind legs behind their ears, scratching themselves. And I just love the idea of this primitive society of space tigers all with now getting fleas and scratching themselves, since I have a little cat that I love and she always scratches herself. And I thought that was really cute, because we've turned them from mighty warriors into little house kitties. And that made me laugh. So now Nort is up there and he's stuck because he's up going to the haze cloud. And he's like, oh no, this is going to be big trouble. And then this was the other sort of crack I had, was that Itty photosynthesizes the killer cloud and absorbs all the bad mojo of the radioactive space cloud, which I'm certain this is not how science works, but Itty is an amazing space plant that wants to get into the Justice League. So he eats the space cloud and synthesizes it. And I even put in Nort's mouth one of my favorite lines, which is, I mean, it makes sense plant wise, but honestly, I did not see that coming. Which I hope is what the audience is thinking as well. Meanwhile, the tigers are all dealing with space fleas and they are scratching and scratching until Adamant tells them to command them to end. And the space tigers are like, what? This guy is great. And then this was the other part that was a little wonky, because I had the tigers talking to each other, but we needed to see what they are saying. And of course, Nort isn't there, so it's not the ring translated. So then I needed to translate it from their tongue. So my editor pointed out, you do more translation in these 5-page stories than we've done in some entire books. And I did have to take that on the nose. I was like, yeah, you're right. I just didn't know how the ring would be translating while it was up in the yellow radioactive space cloud. Again, things you don't think of when you're working very, very quickly. And they thank Adamant for doing this to them, for freeing them from the horrible scratching, as well as from the space cloud, which was making them aggressive. And I thought that was really fun, and is that they thank Adamant for it. They all start roaring. They thank their liberator, Adamant. We have some great roars here. And of course, they think Adamant is so fantastic. They shake his hand and they've carved his face into the side of a mountain to thank him. And once again, Nort calls out, to be honest, I'm a little floored that you did that so quickly, but they are galactic space tigers and they have great claws and carving abilities. So they did that into the side of the mountain. And it is the opposite of not influencing societies. So Nort knows that the Corps is going to be extremely upset with him. But on the other hand, Adamant is like, look, I did it. We did exactly what you said. We kind of won the day. So he gets the win. Although Nort tells him, we're going to call this one a draw, because after all, it was Itty who sucked up all the radioactive space cloud. He was the one who actually saved the day, even though you helped with the space fleas and I didn't die. So it's a draw for these two. And what I also liked that DeMatteis and Geffen set up was that the last panel of the page teases the next story. So I really liked this idea that we have a picture of the atom and Adamant and Itty all posing together under the microscope. This is actually a complete lift from a, I believe it was a Maguire cover for maybe a Justice League International, where they got small and you showed them posed under a magnifying glass. And so that is a reference to that. When I got the job, they asked me what the people that I wanted to have them team up with down the road. So I sort of thought, well, who do I want to use? And they were like, well, use some big names. So I said, well, then I want to use the Atom, because I thought it was great to have the Atom and Adamant. And then I wanted to use Superman. And then they're like, well, throw Batman in there. And I was like, great, let's do a Batman. And then I was like, and then we'll do the wrap up. We'll see who actually gets into the league. And they were like, great. So now I knew that the next one was going to be called When Atoms Collide, because I thought, well, you have these two huge atoms, Adam's Ant and the Atom, coming together, and they're going to collide and give us a whole bunch of energy. So I'll jump right to that one, which was issue number 33, where we open on the watchtower here. And I love how Gus draws the watchtower. And I love Gus's thinking Adamant. He's like, I'm so bored, I'm ready for this. And Adamant wants this to be a big, big event. He wants this to be huge. He just wants to really get out there and make a big splash. So I wanted to do anything I could to sort of set up the fact that this was going to be big and big and big. And then we undermine it with him going, hey, down here, I'm the Atom. So we get Ryan and the new Adam, who I love, and I love his suit. And then, of course, the thing that Adamant is going to do is make fun of his height, because you have to imagine that Adamant has always been sort of mocked for his stature and his size. And I really like the idea that would roll downstream and he would make fun of the Atom and be like, oh, look how cute you are. You could put you in my pocket. The first sort of crack for any story for me is finding the voices of the characters and how that's going to dictate what their relationship is. And so that was a really fun thing. I thought, okay, well, what is the main relationship between Adamant and the Atom? And I got this idea that Adamant sort of always patronizes the Atom and tells him how cute and small and tiny and fun he is, which is something that I've always heard about Adamant. And so I really liked that notion that he would pass that along. And the Atom is sort of like, dude, I'm like an inch taller than you. And Adamant's like, yeah, yeah, but you forgot about the antenna. So they go on this adventure. They're going to go into the microverse and check it out. And Adamant tells him, if you get any smaller, I'm going to have to carry you into my pocket. By the way, Itty's bigger than both of these guys, which totally makes me laugh in this, that he's sort of bigger. So they're going to get really, really small. And I actually get a couple pages where they just sort of mess around and call each other names, and he calls him Short Stack, which makes me laugh, makes Adamant laugh. I love the way Gus draws him giggling here. And then, boom, we're in some atomic world, and it's a little disorienting. Yeah, it's kind of wacky. You got all sorts of weird things floating around, and Adamant's a little disoriented, and he goes to I thought, well, what could he do? He goes to sort of pet this weird globule, and the Atom's like, no, no, that's a virus. You don't want to poke him. You don't want to go anywhere near that. And, you know, when you're writing these stories, they're pretty quick. You got to get to something fast, fast, fast. And yet you want to hit it really strong on the page turn. So I like the idea that Adamant sort of tells us that, oh, no, this is going to be a big issue, because at the page turn for three, he says, oh, I just thought, you know, that was cool because there were so many of them. And the Atom's like, there's what now? And then we see like, oh, there's a lot of these viruses, and they touch the Atom, and we see that you know, he starts again with my sound effects. They start eating through his suit and we're like, oh no. And then they all sort of like glob onto him and they're eating through the suit and they're controlling his suit. And we're like, oh, they seize control of his armor. And then I really like this little moment here on four where Adam Ant says, you know, get behind me, Eddie. I'm going to solve this the way that I always solve this, with my fists, which is very much Adam Ant and very much the way that he's been doing things. Is Adam Ant has this great atomic punch that he's dying to whip out all the time. So here's some action happening. He goes to swing at the atom, but the atom actually shrinks and gets out of his way and then goes and attacks Itty, which was something that I found in the plotting of this. I was like, okay, well, what can the Atom do? Well, he's coming at Itty, and that's Adam Ant's best friend, even though it's his competitor and arch rival, but, you know, it's still his best friend. So he's like, oh no, it's Itty, leave him alone. And he goes to punch out the Atom again. He winds up, this is all he knows, he winds up. And of course, since Itty is a plant, he sends an antibacterial emission through this plant-like mouth, and the gas, poof, he gives a little poof of spitting this antibacterial emission onto the atom, releasing all the viruses. They all roll up and they all discolor. Again, big ups to Hi-Fi for this. The problem is that Adam Ant is still wound up and he didn't know that was happening. That was just a little moment that happens with the atom and Itty. And even though these things are all falling off, Adam Ant says, I'm coming, pal. Wham! And he hits the atom and knocks him so hard that the size control mechanism fails and they grow to be their normal size. So Adam Ant tells himself, well, congratulations to me. I accept the point on this one because I saved us. I brought us back. And he says, you can't, no need to thank me. And you can't because you are out cold. But he probably accepts the win. And now who is next? And then from behind him, we see the big red S and we hear that would be me. And the next episode is going to be called Super Ant, which I thought was sort of fun. It sort of fit with all the different titles that Geffen and DeMatteis were writing. And so that was the next one, was going to be Itty and Adam Ant teaming up with Superman. So that is the most recent one that you have in your hot little hands. And we will go right jump into that one. This is one of my favorite ones because this is when I started to realize that as long as I was writing these stories and they were fun and they were on time, they were really letting me do whatever I wanted to do. I mean, I had used Nort. I had introduced Yellow Space Tigers. I had used the Atom. And I really wanted to push the envelope here. So I pitched to my editor that I was going to use Superman, but I also was going to use some other guests in the Superman universe. And to his credit, Harvey really didn't blink. And so I was like, cool. And so I submitted a script with the Legion of Super Pets, which has Crypto the Super Dog, Streaky the Super Cat, Comet the Super Horse, and Beppo the Super Monkey. These are all real characters. I made up none of them. I'm sure fans will know about them, but I thought, what could be weirder than an ant with powers and a plant with powers? Oh, a bunch of animals teaming up with him. So that really made me laugh. We follow the same structure with our establishing shot up top of the Fortress of Solitude. Gus draws an amazing classic Fortress of Solitude. Adam Ant sort of calls out the obvious, which is Superman doesn't have a lot of furniture in there. I really love using Adam Ant as sort of a catalyst to talk about some of the odder things in the DC universe, like, well, there's really, why aren't you getting furniture in here, man? And it's a little cold. Of course, Superman doesn't notice that, but, you know, he doesn't need to turn on the heat in the Fortress of Solitude. But Superman wanted to do something a little more fun. He wanted to do something, I wanted to find what was a super trial with an ant and a plant that could actually be really fun. And I thought, well, if I can use the Legion of Super Pets, the idea would be they're going to play tag and they're just going to chase each other around the entire world. And there was a version of this script where they just did that. And I realized that I was sort of missing some of the super stakes. We were invested in Adam Ant's struggle and we were invested in Itty, but there really wasn't anything else happening. So I wanted to introduce midway. There was a problem that Adam Ant was rubbing all these super pets the wrong way. And there was a problem. And, he was going to go solve the problem, and yet they were still going to play the game and he was going to lose the trial. But I wanted to show that he was a hero and he was willing to lose the trial in order to save lives. And all the super pets sort of realized, like, yeah, they needed to do that as well. So they all pitch in to help, and he sort of earns their respect through that. And I thought that was a really fun thing to do, that even though he might lose this point, he gains their respect. So that was where I started for this story. I loved introducing the Legion of Super Pets. Gus draws at the bottom this sort of very heroic, it's the end of the slow motion walk. They're all posing and they're all beautiful. We're at the bottom of one and they're just all hanging there. And we get this great hero shot of all the super pets. And then I realized they don't talk. The super pets don't ever talk. So how's Adam Ant, who's a talking ant, going to communicate with these guys? I was like, well, maybe Beppo can use sign language because he's a super monkey. I don't know. It all felt a little odd. And I was like, oh, no, how am I going to get past this? And that's where I hit upon something that's maybe my favorite bit in the story, which is, well, there's two things that are my favorite bits, and I think they're both on, well, three things. Okay, you know what? I'm going to walk you through all the things. The first thing that I love is on page two, which is Adam Ant says hi, and now they're out of the heroic pose. They're all acting like animals. And I thought that was really funny because very rarely you get to undermine these super heroic animals by watching them act like animals. So Gus draws Crypto scratching an itch behind his ear. Streaky's cleaning herself. Comet is grazing for, I assume, ice in the Fortress of Solitude. And Beppo is just sort of sitting there scratching behind his ears, totally not understanding what Adam Ant says. So then this was my other idea that really got me excited, which is, well, Adam Ant has antenna. Why doesn't he just tune his antenna into their wavelength? And he does. He tunes them like their old rabbit ears and finds their wavelength. And he gets a little snippet of Streaky and Crypto talking. You know, Streaky's mad. She doesn't want this play date to miss her nap on the sun. And Crypto tells us that the strange ant creature stinks of damp earth and overenthusiasm. And then all of a sudden Adam Ant says, hey there, guys. And I wanted to make sure that they're like, wait, you can understand us. And he's like, yeah, I tuned into your wavelength, which I thought was great, because now all of a sudden I have the ant can totally understand all the other characters, and now they can talk and now they can interact. And to me, that was a really fun way to use Adam Ant's innate antness as a crack to sort of unlock the rest of this story. So now the characters can actually interact. So the notion is everyone with an S is it, and they're all going to try to tag Adam Ant and Itty, and then they're just going to go, they're going to play. So on your mark, get set, go. They all go, they zoom off through the Fortress of Solitude, except for Itty, who is gone. Itty has disappeared into... I don't know if Itty is a him or a her because he's a plant, but let's just say the plants vase. He goes right into the pot and disappears. Superman looks at it and says, interesting. And then we cut to around the world. All the animals are chasing each other and they're all trying to get Adamant and they can't get him. And they're going all around. And finally, Crypto says, I got him. I got him. And he sticks his super tongue out, which this full disclosure. This big moment came from my dog named Tucker, who looks like Scooby-Doo. And he sticks his tongue way, way out. And I thought that was a really fun little moment that he would stick his tongue way out and tag Adamant with his tongue. And also, it got me to my third favorite moment in this bit, which is finally I got to use the mandibles that Gus had designed on Adamant. So Crypto tags him, he spins around, and then he tries to go, and he realizes that Adamant has him caught in the mandible. His tip of his tail is caught in his mandibles. And I like that idea that Adamant is almost equally as strong as Crypto, and the two of them struggle for a bit, which I thought was fun. This was a very hard page to pace for me. I think Gus lays it out beautifully. And once I sort of was very clear about what it was I wanted the notion of this sort of tug of war back and forth between Adamant and Crypto, and finally Crypto to sort of push forward and rip out of his mandibles, and that rip throwing him off and sending him flying through a passenger jet and smashing through one of the engines. So Crypto cripples this jet, and Adamant tries to call timeout. Streaky tells us there's no such thing because she's a little bit of a prissy kitty cat like my cat, and she plays by the rules and says, absolutely not. I'm going to come tag you. And he says, well, I don't care. I'm going to go save this plane. And he goes under there and he's like, come on, Leverage, because he's tiny, even though he's super strong. He's worried about this. And that's our page turn, which gets us to the shot of all the heroes helping him save this jet, because they all realized off panel, yeah, we really got to be helping this guy. He's doing the right thing. It's not going to be right for us to penalize him. I love this picture of Comet, the super horse, using his back, and everybody is helping, and they save the plane. And then we have the hero shot, and Gus nails this loving look of Crypto to Superman, and he's just so happy. You know, he's just looking at his best friend, and Superman tells us, like, that's amazing. You guys did a great job. Thank you so much. It was great that you saved it, but I kind of have to play by the rules. We still need a winner. And there's Itty. Itty has popped out of his pot, and he says, well, this one goes to Itty because Itty was not tagged. And then all the animals are trying to make Adamant feel a little bit better. They call him the Mighty Mite. They say maybe you could put on a red cape and you could be Super Ant. One of my favorite pieces of dialogue I found after the fact when I was doing my lettering pass is Comet says, nay, I say, which I think is one of the only things he says in the whole book, but it sounded very much like Comet, which I think was always sort of the leader of the Legion of Super Pets. He was sort of the haughty leader, and I picture him as very high status, and I wanted to use him very sparingly. And then for our next one, we tag Itty and Adamant sunbathing on the bat signal, and that lets us know who we're dealing with next. And then all we see is off panel, Batman is saying, get down, which I thought was pretty funny that they're just hanging up. And then the next one is called In the Belfry. And I can tell you that it takes us to the Batcave, where they are going to have to figure out a mystery that Batman concocts, and Adamant finds a way for it all to go wrong. And it is my favorite classic version of the Batcave, with the giant Penny and the Tyrannosaurus Rex and the giant Joker card and all that stuff. And I love the way that Gus draws it, and I'm excited for you guys to see it. So, and then our last issue is going to be number 36, where we will wrap this up with something called award season. That will be our last story, where we'll see who actually gets into the Justice League. And all of our guest stars will be together and talk about if we should let Itty or if we should let Adamant in, and what finally happens with these two characters who I've grown to love. And I hope you have too. And I've grown to be best friends. By the way, Itty is an actual character. He was a companion of Hal Jordan's, I believe, and a number of Green Lanterns. So anyway, go look him up because he is real. And it was ridiculous. It was just the right level of ridiculousness that they added Itty in this with Adamant. And it made me laugh a lot. So I knew that that was a character I really wanted to make sure I could use and pay good tribute to, as well as Adamant, who is a fantastic Hanna-Barbera character. And I just adore the way that Gus has designed him. So read these stories. And also the Scooby-Doo Apocalypse stories are not too bad either. I would very much recommend those. They're drawn amazing. They're so much fun. They capture very much all the good Hanna-Barbera dynamics that are sort of grounded and yet push and pull into really fun zombie apocalypse world by Dematis and Geffen, I believe, or just Dematis from this point on. So check those out, because the Scooby Gang is a really fun, pliable set of characters, and it's fun to see them utilized and played with in a completely different forum. And J.M. Dematis is a genius, and I'm a huge fan of his, so please go check those out and read the rest of the Adamant stories. Go back and take a look at them and yell at me on Twitter at my name at Heath Corson, or you can look at me on Instagram, which is at H Corson, which is really just pictures of the dogs and the cats that I own and how they influence me in making comic books and how I try to put them in stuff. Pictures of wine and food that I'm drinking. So really the Twitter is where you want to be, because that's going to be actually about comic books and stuff. But, I want to thank Ben Blacker for bringing me on this and for finding a great way to do, a comic podcast where he needs to do absolutely nothing except make the writers come in and the artists come in and do all the work. And, that is just vintage Ben Blacker to me. So congratulations, Ben. There's no way that you listened all the way to this point. So hopefully you all can yell at Ben Blacker on Twitter at Ben Blacker and tell him, hey, thanks for letting Heath on. Bring him back and tell him, way to go, way to crack a great idea and make everybody else have to do it. So thanks so much. This has been Comic Book Commentary. I will be back when I have more stuff to talk about, or just to bug Ben Blacker. I'll probably come back and we will talk about the last two Adamant stories. So stay tuned and Excelsior.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit ForeverDogPodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.